No previous radio experience is necessary. For information, contact Lynn at 518-697-7400 or simply send an email to apply@wgxc.org.
Do you have some news to share with WGXC listeners or a special community event you want everyone to know about? You can send press releases on any subject to news@wgxc.org, where they will be shared with all WGXC reporters, hosts, and programmers. Anyone can also add an event to the WGXC calendar online at wgxc.org/events. Just go to wgxc.org/events and click on the Add an Event button at the top of the page and type in the information about your event. WGXC announcers read these events on the air throughout the day, and internet readers can access them anytime. So please let WGXC listeners know when you're making news or when you have an event to share with your community.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Tobacco-Free Action of Columbia and Greene Counties, working to protect children from tobacco marketing in stores. Visit on the web at rvwtobaccofree.org.
And welcome to WGXC 90.7 FM. We're here locally and globally. And this is the Art of the Hudson Valley. I'm your host, Chad Weckler. Thank you for joining us, listeners. I'm on every first Thursday of the month. And today we have three guests in the studio, and we're going to be discussing a wonderful project that's happening here in Hudson, New York. It's called Hudson Artworks, and it's a great program that has paired Hudson High School students with professional artists to create self-portraits. And I'm going to ask all our three lovely guests to introduce themselves.
Hello, my name is Louise Smith. I am a program assistant at the Hudson Opera House and the project coordinator for Hudson Artworks.
Hi, I'm Myron Pollenberg. I'm a working artist living on Warren Street in Hudson.
Hi, I'm Frank Tartaglione, a painter from Brooklyn, now living and working in Ghent, and very, very happy to be part of this community and this project. It's been a lot of fun.
And Myron, you're probably the best person to ask, how did this all begin?
Well, about 20 years ago, I went to a show called Artworks in New York City. It was at the ICP Gallery. Hmm. What they were the large-scale Polaroids. Chuck Close and a batch of other artists, Bill Wegman was involved, and I, about a year ago, was in a flea market, and I saw a little book that I never knew was published called Artworks, and it was from the city, and it was the publication of the show, and I thought that would be a great thing to do in Hudson, and I called the Opera House, frankly, and told them that this was my idea, that I was going to approach the high school, and that I wanted to use them as support, as credentials for putting the show together, because the high school wouldn't know me worth a damn. In any event, I contacted Lisa Dolan. I met her actually through my wife, Peggy, because she's involved in Hudson Reads. And Lisa put me in touch with Principal Abitabel, and he was excited about it and set up a meeting for us, and we met with Liz, who was the head of the art group, and from there we were off and running.
That's amazing. So how long ago did that take place?
Oh, God, my memory is shot, but I think it was the better part of 6 months.
Wow. And so what was the next move? Because there is a nice list, and Frank is one of the artists involved. How did you connect with the artist, the professional artist, and then connect with the students at the high school?
Well, I connected with the artist I knew personally. I then went down and saw Jeff Bailey, who has a wonderful gallery on Lower Warren Street, and he gave me a list of other artists that he thought would be right. He was very supportive of the project. And so that's how we sort of put the collection of artists together. And I'll let Frank talk because I'm getting a little dry in the mouth.
Take over, Frank.
It's been a great experience for me. We met initially at the high school in the art room. And the students were at one end of the room and the artists were at the other end of the room. And we were kind of sizing each other up. Slowly we drifted together and it was time for the students to draw a name out of a hat. There was this young man, a junior, at the school named Danny Gellis. He was the first to choose. He dipped his hand in the hat and pulled out my name. And I was delighted because he was one of two or three of the students that I felt a kind of, an affinity towards or an interest in from the very beginning. And it's been magic. Danny's a photographer, has been a photographer since he was 3 years old.
Wow.
And even though I'm not professionally a photographer, I've taken a billion pictures. I'm a painter. But it was interesting to share our visual worlds with each other. Not knowing how sophisticated he was, I brought at our first meeting a stack of photography books, and including Lee Friedlander, who's one of my favorite sort of abstractionist photographers. And I found out that Danny was already doing work like those in the big books. So that was gratifying. And so we were on the same page.
Now, the project is for the students to do a self-portrait. Is that correct?
Yes. And part of the work was to show them that a self-portrait doesn't necessarily have to mean a drawing that they do of themselves in the mirror. Mm-hmm. That it could be, they could present abstract work that they feel is a portrait of the way they feel, their outlook in life. And so that's the course that a lot of the students did.
And how often would you meet with your student?
I think it was up to the artists to do whatever they wanted to. I mean, I met with Danny four or five times at his house, showed me his work, and we kind of went from there.
So you were basically acting as a mentor?
Yes, I think so. Danny's work was already done. You know, I didn't give him assignments, photography assignments. He had thousands of photographs to review and choose from. So it was an editing process. Mm. What was important to him? Which of the photographs really meant something? How can we pair them and bring a group of the photographs together that turned out to be a portrait of himself? And he got that immediately.
Myron, I'd like to also ask you, because you mentioned Peggy and doing the mentoring reading program. Mm-hmm. So these seem to be two really wonderful programs that are collaboration between community and the school and the school students. Can you explain what Peggy does? Because I think that's also of interest.
Well, Peggy, every Thursday, I want to say 11 o'clock, 11 noon, somewhere in there, goes to the intermediate school and reads with, sometimes two, but with two specific students. Each gets half of her time. And this program has been going on for 5 or 6 years. We just learned about it last year, and she signed up for it. The thing I'd like to say, because I hear so much negativity about the Hudson school system, is I find it quite remarkable. I think the biggest thing that got in our way in working on my project, on our project, excuse me, was that the children seem to be overcommitted with stuff to do at the school. At the high school level, these kids are kept so busy that you have to find time within their schedule to make it work, which is why I think it took so much time, so long, because to hope to get you a couple of hours a week with these kids was like amazing. I mean, it was really an effort because they had tests, they had a lot of stuff that was going on. School keeps them very active. But getting back to our project, enough of the school. Getting back to our project, I found that when we when I asked artists to do this, they were very positive about doing it. I didn't get any negativity at all. The only people that did not get a chance to do it were some who were just overbooked themselves and scheduled and not going to be in town. They declined. But people like Lynn Davis and Tim Fresher, who is right now over in Liberia, doing a film on the aftermath of Ebola, he worked with a student. The product they did was amazing, the young girl that I work with shockingly started dancing at 3 years old, Alicia, and she's still dancing. And she was looking to do stuff that was outside of herself. We met about five times. She's a delightful, young, polite girl. I hate to say it, I sound like an old fogey. But I was concerned because she was so polite. I didn't think that there was going to be a lot of give and take. And when it came to the point where she had to commit to making a piece of work, we went to my friend's studio, Antoine Lutin, and she sat on the floor for an hour, hour and a half, and she constructed something that became a photograph that I think is nothing short of marvelous. And I'd like to have Louise talk a little bit, because she was actually the one who was involved in making sure all the coordination, all the stuff really happened. She can give you some insight, because I was driving her crazy for sure, because nothing gets done soon enough for my impatience.
Well, I think it's also really important to point out that that this project was really a challenge for both the artists and the students that participated in it. I think we're really proud of the student artists, because they're putting themselves in a very vulnerable position working one-on-one with a professional artist and really, really reflecting on themselves and where they are at as seniors in high school, which is a tough time in someone's life, I think.
I think so.
What else? I think also another challenge that we had was that the difference between this project and the one that happened in New York about 20 years ago is that there wasn't a focus on photography. We left the medium very open-ended, and we also let the artists really have like free range with how they go about doing this, which really meant that they had to sufficiently engage in conversations about self-representation and allow the collaboration to be a meaningful process, which is not easy.
No, it's not. And so we're going to be at the Opera House when the exhibition, and that comes up when?
May 16th is the opening, and it's from 5 to 7.
So we're going to be pleasantly surprised by the diversity of the self-portrait project, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think, frankly, that some people will be overwhelmed, because some of these pieces are just spectacular at the highest level. And just rest assured that this is the stuff the kids did. This is the stuff the students did. Because I asked of every artist to do one thing: not make it theirs, and do everything they can to assist, to open the world to these students and to assist them in their process, not necessarily to pervert the thing and have them do your exercise. So when I look at this body of work, and there's a dozen pieces, I see things that are uniquely different, so there is influence by the artist, but more importantly, what I see, because I know most of the artists, it's not their work. It's something they embrace of the young person's work and help them fulfill it.
I think that's true mentorship.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm really excited about the show. I'm also excited at the fact that in Hudson, which I've always desired, that we will have all communities in the room at the same time, which to me is a privilege to be part of.
And personally, I think the Opera House is a perfect venue for that experience.
Yeah, I think the Opera House has done an amazing job at serving all the communities.
Now, would these art pieces be for sale? I'm just kind of curious. Or
oh, This is a sticky question.
There are still some things we are trying to figure out.
I think probably not, but, you know, again, it's up to the artist, but I don't know how you put a price on it.
I think most likely the pieces will probably be given to the students that participated in the project, just as a gift.
I think that's a great idea, because if it was me at that age, I would find it very difficult to let go of something so uniquely created. I have all my artwork from when I was 5, 6, 18. I can't part with it.
Yeah.
And I have all my kids' artwork from when they were 5 and 6, etc., because they could part with it.
Yeah. Frank, did you also work with some of the other artists, sort of collaborate, talk to them about their experiences with the students they were working with?
No, there wasn't an interaction in that way. I mean, it just was
one-to-one,
setting things up with Danny and his family. He's a young man who's really got a full plate to deal with, schoolwork, track. He's a busy kid. My only regret is that we didn't spend more time together, but I think we've become friends, and I'll look forward to spending more time with Danny and his family in the future. Yeah, for sure.
I personally find the career of an artist is not something that's often in the head of a student. Even the students who are in art class, it's just something that they enjoy. But Myron, do you think some of these students might expand on a creative point?
That's really not my expectation, but I will tell you this. I think what they will have is an event in their life that has a process to it that will allow them to reflect on it and help take them forward in their life. Hopefully some might want to choose to be in the arts. But I think that the interaction and the resolution of some of the problems that come up in communicating who you are will serve them well, and hopefully they could do it even if they want to be an accountant.
I think that's great, because...
Nothing against accountants, Mike.
certainly, the creative process does lead into accounting, being a teacher, being an engineer. I mean, it goes into every occupation, and I think that's one of the important reasons why art should be still in schools. And what was the art department like at the high school? Because I've never experienced it myself.
It appeared to me, you know, I didn't spend time with the art department, but I saw a lot of stuff on the walls, and I've seen the enthusiasm even of the kids that didn't participate. It seems like it's a very active art department. They have classes there that I thought have long been gone from public education. You know, they have things about citizenship, you know, and humanities. And if you ask anybody on the street that doesn't have a kid that's going to that school, or you wouldn't imagine that that's what's going on also, you know. And I actually was very, I was overwhelmed by what I thought was the commitment of the school to its students.
Liz Albino, the chair of the art department, was the woman that we were working with mostly over there, and she was incredibly helpful and excited about Hudson Artworks from the start. So we also want to thank her for all of her hard work as well.
I was really impressed. My first visit to the school, finding my way to the art room for this first meeting, big abstract paintings, not all abstract, but, you know, big paintings all over the walls. I mean, clearly there's an emphasis at the school on art, and that was heartening. Mm. Yeah.
And there's, Louisa, there are also at the Opera House many, many programs that deal with young people. Can you explain some of the programs that are geared at the Opera House towards young people?
Sure. We have all sorts of programs at the Opera House. Most of which are free. A hip-hop class dance with this great dancer named Anthony Molina, flamenco, tap dance, an art class, a class on, I think it's on Tuesdays, which is just like a song circle, just a very welcoming atmosphere for young kids. Yeah.
You know, it's been a long time since I was in high school. And I'm curious, when Myra and you were talking about their busy schedules, are we talking all seniors in this project?
Well, it was seniors and juniors, but it's a fairly busy schedule. I mean, the toughest thing was to get these kids to, I keep saying kids, Jesus, I'm old. I'm trying to remember when I was in high school. It was so long ago. I think we still went to school by a covered wagon. But anyway, these young people were really very, very active. You know, if you'd call, they'd call and cancel and say, oh, I forgot, I have to do a, and you'd reschedule. The thing that was, to me, the big smile at the first sight of it was when we went into the art room. It was a mess. And that, to me, says, art's being made here, you know? And it just felt like there was a commitment to these young people making art at the high school level.
Now, I know, Myron, you love working in the studio.
Yes.
And
so did two other artists that used my studio with their students.
and Frank, where do you paint? Where do you like to paint?
Well, my primary studio is in our house in Ghent. Mm. It's an old factory building that we've been renovating over the past 30 years, and I've got a big portion of that for my studio. But all the work, 90% of the work with Danny was at his house. Mm. Under the close supervision of his parents. They were very interested and very hands-on in the process. And then at the very end, Danny and his dad came over out to Ghent, and we kind of put the finishing touches together on Danny's piece. Yeah.
Well, Frank, you bring up an interesting point, the parents. Parents having their own careers, their own work schedule, their students kind of have the same thing going on just at a high school level. And I can see two generations at home trying to make this project happen. And I love the idea of the artist visiting the student, working with the family and seeing this happen. Can either of you, I mean, we've heard about Danny, but Myron, can you pass along any stories, for instance, your mentorship?
I could tell you three stories. One is mine.
Good.
The other is an artist named Judy Dryland, and the other is an artist named Paul Brown, because they both used my studio. My relationship with Alicia was interesting because her parents always dropped her off, but they did not come in. They gave her the room to express herself without being looking over her shoulder, and I hate to say it that way, but looking over her shoulder to make sure that she was doing the kind of work that they would necessarily be proud of.
I understand that. Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was pretty liberating for her. Mm. I just keep reflecting on what happened between the third and fourth meeting, which was when I gave her a batch of newsprint paper and said, fill it with anything you want, scribbles, cutouts from magazines, lists of things you think about, anything you want, but fill them for the fourth meeting. And the fourth meeting, we started to look at some art books and some photographs and some paintings. And I think a bell went off between one of the lists that she had and one of the pictures that may have influenced her. And I said, you're ready, so next week, you want to do this as a photograph, next week, bring a duffel bag full of the stuff you think you want to shoot. Hmm. And as I said, we went to this photographer's studio. I only had one question because he only had two kinds of background. I said, do you want it on a black background or a white background? And she said, black. And then I stepped out and sat on the couch, and she sat on the floor for about an hour, hour and a half, and she composed her piece of work. And it was sort of remarkable. And then they put it on a computer, so I got a chance to really look at it. Yeah. And in the middle of her working with him to tone things down or bring things up, she said, how would this look as a vertical?
Good.
And said, I took this horizontal and turned it into a vertical. And that's when I intervened. I said, if you like the vertical better, let's go back in the other room and reshoot it as a vertical, because you can't fool the eye. You can't stand something on its side and think accept people to accept that it's right. And they did that, and they did a beautiful job. Judy Dreiland had a young fella who, he's Muslim, and she had a very interesting approach to the whole thing. She met his family, but she had an interesting approach. She called me one day and said, are you going to that opening tonight? I said, yes. She said, can I bring Amir by to see a studio? So she took him out for a cup of coffee or chocolate at La Perche. Yeah. He'd never been there. She brought him over to my studio. Clearly, he's never been there. And then we all went to this opening. So she introduced him to the world of what artists do and how we live and behave.
Great.
And he's a great young man. I see a lot for him. I think he wants to be a doctor. I wish he would be an artist because he's interesting. And so they used my studio to work at, and they met religiously and kept plugging at it till he finished his work. And Paul Brown, who also used my studio, that was completely different. Mm-hmm. The young woman he was working with was always there with her mother. So it ran the gamut between people feeling they had to be there to supervise to people feeling they can trust their children, let them go and have it, you know, have at it. And so there was no one thing. And I was thrilled to see all of this only because it particularly fit in with what my imagination about this was, is that every artist will try to assist this young person and stay out of the way of their vision except to help it get accomplished. And you could see it in the work.
And Louise, have you met all the artists?
I've met all of the artists, and I've also met all of the students. And as you can see, based off of what Myron was just saying, there are so many different methods and approaches that the pairs took to finally come up with their final piece. And this whole project really is a total experiment. This is the first time that we've done it, so we're still learning, and we're still trying to figure out ways to improve it. As Frank was saying before, we haven't had a moment for all of the artists to just sort of get together and talk about what worked and what didn't work, which is something that I think after the show we hope to do. So we're just really excited about pushing forward with it after this happens and hopefully doing it again.
How's the exhibition actually going to be done? Do you collaborate? Is there a one curator? Do the students come in and have a conversation? How are you looking forward to actually placing the art?
I'm going to curate the show.
There's going to be we've created a book that I have asked each of the artists and each of the students to write an artist statement / reflection on the process. So there will be a book at the opening, just so that you can get a more expansive sense of what this experience was for each of them.
That's a hard part in itself.
Yeah.
Is to you can visualize and make something, but to actually write it down takes another talent.
Right.
Frank, did you participate in any of that with Danny? Or is it up to Danny to sort of write that statement down himself?
Oh, I left that to him. I mean, I wrote mine, And I'd seen other things that he'd written about his work. He's been in other exhibitions. He just had some photographs up at Columbia Green, which I assume was a great success. He was very happy about that. So he was pretty articulate and able to write his own thing. Actually, in all truth, I mean, when I read it, I edited a couple of things that just were maybe redundant or whatever. I helped him a little bit stylistically with it, but all the thoughts were his own.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I often need some help in the writing process for a different person to look at it and say, yes, your punctuation, something is a little redundant. You've left sort of an open space where something could be said. And I kind of like this mentorship that Myron, you created, and letting creativity happen from the student's point of view, but this guiding that they would not have had otherwise. I'm just tickled by it, and I'm looking forward to the exhibition. Can you sort of give us a little bit more, something that we wouldn't know when we go to the exhibition that you would like to impart? I mean, you've gotten some great stories, which I really love, but surprises.
Well, there will be surprises. You'll find that... It's very difficult to put in words, but for me, the truth is that these young artists, young students, if you expose them to a variety of visual notions and leave them alone to digest it, what comes of it is something you won't expect. Because I think that the when you usually see a student art show, and if it was a self-portrait show, and everything is just a drawing of a face that they saw and rendered in all different styles in a mirror, versus this, which goes from still lives to landscape. Mm. I mean, one young lady that Val worked with, Val Schaff worked, her vision was to do a portrait in the woods, in a gown. That was her initial vision that Val was trying to help her realize. Of course, it was February, and it was ankle-deep in snow, so Val brought along a cape, a rope, something to keep this child from freezing to death. And they would go back and forth and experiment with it, and Val shot, printed a whole ream of pictures of this situation in black and white. And then they were colored in, you know, with pastels. And you'll see, it's a diptych, and it's quite wonderful. And Tim Fresher worked with a young Native American artist, student artist, who wanted to show both sides of himself, one being a contemporary teenager, and the other being proud of his heritage. And so, and I don't even know how this is accomplished, but a photographer that does this stuff for a living would. They shot two images that they married and got this material that's, for me to describe it, seems like it's clear plexi corduroy. And this thing got all put together. And when you walk past the picture, you see a transition. Now, this was not Tim's idea. It was just his knowledge, because the boy's idea was to reflect the both sides of himself. And this was a tool he showed him, and he elected to do it. And so, you know, so there's all these sort of magical, wonderful surprises that you wouldn't think would come from a kid that has a limited exposure, not judgmental, but a limited exposure to the universe. I would have never thought of that.
Mm.
I didn't know it existed. So, you know, there's some stuff in there that just gives me a big smile, because the work is really at a level that you would say could potentially be a college graduate essay, you know, at the end of his term.
Louise, any surprises that you experienced?
I think that in reading the reflections that I got back from a lot of the artists and students, what was really interesting to me, I knew that a lot of the student artists were had a really great and personal experience with these artists, but it was really interesting for me, like we were just talking about Tim Fresh, one of his responses was that Brent really kind of brought his creativity back to his life. He like has really changed the way that he thinks about approaching his own artwork. So that's really where this idea of a collaboration and really getting something out of it for both of them was just a really great to read about and to hear.
A personal observation, which I think Myron brought up, is we have lots of galleries here in Hudson, dozens, in fact. Rarely do you see a teenager at an opening or even casually at a gallery. It's usually from 20 to 90. And I think also there is that disconnect that is unfortunate where, and this is maybe a subjective point of view from me, is, let's say, for instance, Warren Street is almost a different place as we move out of Warren Street. And Hudson and Columbia County, we're all on the same landscape. But it's unfortunate that there is that disconnect, which doesn't have to be there. But that introduction, I love, you know, going to Le Perche and then going to the gallery, and that introduction, I'd love to see more of. Mm-hmm. Yes, Frank.
That was a big draw for me when Myron first proposed the idea. I mean, his enthusiasm for bringing disparate factions of our part of the world up here together, that really convinced me that it's something that I wanted to do. A winter walk, for instance, is a wonderful way that, you know, it's the world in miniature, it's Hudson's world in miniature, all on Warren Street.
True.
And another thing that impressed me was you forget how young teenagers are. Mm. It was a surprise to me how insular, maybe that's the wrong word, but parading up and down Warren Street was not part of Danny's life. You know, it's not big part of, I think, most high school students' life. It's the center of our world and the artists, but it's not for the general community. And we've got to, I'd love to just participate in another program like this or other programs where people are brought together.
I think personally I've seen Perfect 10 as one of those organizations that is crossing that divide, which I think is very important. There never should be a situation, also speaking from opinion, versus me, us versus them. We're all together, and there are many crossroads that we can take. Myron and the Opera House have done that. You've created sort of a byway, highway.
It's interesting that you brought up Perfect 10, because Paula was a co-worker with me. We both worked
Paula
at two
Foreman.
Paula
yep.
Foreman, yes. We both worked at two different agencies together. And I knew when I saw her up here after years of not seeing each other, she was going to do something, because we had talked. This is before she did Perfect 10. She's an amazing woman, and she is very committed to justice. And I am thrilled that Perfect 10 is working so well for her. You know, for the students, but certainly for her, and she is accomplishing her objectives.
Yeah, I forgot to ask Louise, what's your official title at the Opera House?
I'm a program assistant.
All right.
That is my title.
The other title was project coordinator.
I am the project coordinator for this project.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Double title.
Yes, that's
and
right.
I would use her as a project coordinator on anything I got involved in.
Thanks, Myron.
I mean, I can't give her a big enough shout out of thank you.
Mm. It was really a fantastic opportunity for everyone. I think we're all really pleased with how it turned out.
Well, I'm kind of curious, Louise. How did you get into the position? And are you an artist? Or
I am actually. I'm a painter. I studied at Bard College, and I graduated in 2013. So yes, I am also working on my own work, and hopefully the next time we do this, I would love to take on a student as well and be a mentor too. So
there may be a part two somewhere in the future of artworks.
Yes, I think if we could work out some of the bumps, they'll be.
Sounds
definitely.
Like you're doing it.
You know, but getting back to your thought, and I'm a true believer in it, there really is only one Hudson, and it's unfortunate that sometimes it behaves like two Hudsons, but it really is one Hudson. I mean, in order for this thing to work, it can't only be us guys on Warren Street that dominate the conversation.
Totally agree. And it's both, it crosses income and social across the board. And I love that we are one Hudson. And out of curiosity, since I've met and spoken with Myron just a few times, and same thing with Frank, but I'd like Myron talk about your background as an artist. Where did you get started? And what brought you to Hudson? That's, you know, that's a wide.
I'm a refugee from New York City. I had lost the studio I was subletting because they tripled the rent, and I said to Peggy, "We got to get out of town. I need some room to work." And that's sort of what I had a weekend house in Dutchess County, down right on the Wappingers Creek, right, just outside of Millbrook. Hmm. And we sold that because I wanted to put more time and effort into painting in the city. And I always remembered coming to Hudson. It was quite a different Hudson when I came while I had that house, because that's 35, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. Wow, am I old. Jesus Christ. in any event, I actually came up to Hudson once on a boat and was able to anchor it. And walk up from Front Street to, at that time, only 5th Street and 6th Street and 7th Street area on Warren Street.
Is that back when stagecoaches would bring you back?
No,
back and forth.
Yeah, that was
way
when
back,
you know,
when.
I was a pioneer in Hell's Kitchen, and which is now Clinton. It's become a very fancy, unrecognizable neighborhood. But when I came up to Hudson, it was already gone a long way. We're only here since 2002, but I never think in terms of it's a bad neighborhood. Hmm. I always think in terms of it's just people trying to get by. You know, I come out of Williamsburg when Williamsburg was worse than downtown Hudson. Hmm. You know, I grew up the same way people in Bliss Towers grew up. So I have a real cause to try to right what I think is unjust.
And knowing your artwork, you're not just a painter. I think your description of the mentorship of expressing yourself through anything can inspire. And you love doing sculptures and collage. Mm-hmm. You have one of those minds that sparks like a firecracker sometimes.
Yeah, especially when my skills and talent don't take me far enough. I change the vernacular.
And Frank, you're a painter, and you're primarily...
And he has a show opening the same night as our show.
Oh, you're going to be doing double duty.
Right, at Gree Gallery.
So everyone has to check both of them out.
That's a good idea. So
that's right.
Frank, talk about your upcoming exhibition.
Well, I'm working with Steve Izzo at Gallery Gree. My last show was 2 years ago, and we're going at it again. Not much to say. I'm not sure I could describe the paintings. It's new work. Yes.
Yeah.
Hope you're interested enough to come and have a look.
Sure. That's one of the few areas I think on Warren Street where there are a lot of I mean, your Gree is next to Wendy McDerris, which is across the street from Carrie Haddad, and I love when all of the three galleries decide to open at once, and we're not talking big galleries. I mean, even the Hudson Opera House is a very modest space. Because, and it also does many other things in other spaces. But you know, when you go into a museum, I'm almost overwhelmed by the amount of space. And I love the smaller galleries that we have here where you don't get overwhelmed. You can actually get absorbed by the artwork without being intimidated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that we're talking... What date to what date is the exhibition?
Well, it opens on the 16th. That's the opening night and the reception for the artist.
Yeah.
And I imagine it'll go for about a month.
Good.
There'll be big, fairly large-scale oil paintings and smaller things framed under glass. And the subject matter is all about what I look at on a day-to-day basis. It's a sort of an abstract version of the view. And a little more complicated. I'm a little nervous about talking into this microphone and being very articulate about it, but like that.
Better you than me. And Louise, the show, the artworks is only up till May 31st. Is that correct?
That's right. It's a short time, so people need to make sure that they put it into their calendar. Yeah.
And the Opera House is open every day.
It is. It's open from 10 to 5 every day. And this show will go from 5 to 7 on May 16th, so for the reception. And hopefully we'll have all of the artists and the student artists and their families there. And yeah.
And Frank, the Gree show, is that 5 to 7 also your opening?
No, mine's 6 to 8.
Oh, right.
So,
perfect.
Perfect. Worked out great.
So early on at the Opera House and then a little bit later... on Warren Street, further up Warren Street. Yeah.
And since I have you both here, we have still some time left to talk shop, you might say. And Myron, I've been at your lovely home here in Hudson, and I'm one of those, you know, except for Louise, we're all kind of in the same age bracket thereabouts. And I
give or take a decade.
and you were also in the graphic design business?
Yes, I was. I misspent the early part of my life being a very successful graphic designer, advertising guy, a la the Mad Men generation. Mm. And I worked at Columbia Records as a graphic designer. And then I opened my own design studio. And... With great sacrifice with the monies I was making to what I wanted to try to do, and then got fortunate enough to design the entire collection for the next 10 years of the Swiss Army watch, which afforded me to get the hell out of New York and come up to Hudson.
And I'm always, as a photographer, inspired by graphics and graphic designs, you know, from the entire 20th century. Is for me amazing.
Yeah.
And I don't see it. I mean, with the computer, and I'm speaking from my own opinion, the computer has really changed things, don't you think?
Yes, it has. I share your feeling because I'm not computer literate, so understand this is biased. But
I'm open to that.
But what I sensed when the computer started to get introduced, just about the time I was trying to close down and get back to being what I thought I should be doing, which is making paintings, I was noticing that a lot of the young people that got involved in the graphic arts business became interactive with the machine, and their ability to think outside of what the machine can give them back started to narrow. And I used to have young people that worked with me when I was still doing some graphic design, and I would say, communicate what you're thinking with a pencil and paper to me. You don't have to draw well. You don't even have to spell the words correctly. But give me something that comes from you, not something that you know you can get back from the machine. And I think that what we're seeing now in this vernacular of computer graphics, although some of it is very interesting, is this narrowing of the ability to think outside the box, no pun intended.
Yeah.
So, you know, the last wonderful graphic that I think I've seen, and I haven't been paying much attention to it for a long time, was when Apple introduced the little white music.
The iPod.
Yeah. And they had those silhouettes on bright colors with just this white element coming through it. I said, that was an interesting graphic, but I don't think that came because the machine made it happen. I think that came because somebody was thinking with a pencil and paper of what would be a magical thing to look at.
And Frank, what inspires you? Wait, most of your work is abstract. What are you inspired by? What?
Well, the final manifestation of it is abstraction. But I think it comes from being a kind of, a lonely outcast kid who stared out the window a lot and just became super aware of the detail and directionality, primarily, that's what interests me most, of what I'm looking at. So it doesn't matter if it's a tree or a house, or the narrative is less important than what actually happens structurally in the view before me. And so that's what these paintings that's what I'm painting now.
And Louise, I'm kind of curious. You went through Bard, which is an art school. I've had very limited experience with Bard. And can you give me sort of your little autobiography of your time at Bard and what you learned in art and how you grew?
Sure. I was originally going to be a written arts major, and I switched pretty quickly because I decided that the studio art department was just the right place for me. I took one class with the artist Joseph Santori, and it really just changed my whole, my whole career path. What I really love to do, and it just was. It was such a small, tight knit community. All of my friends were artists, and we were lucky enough to also get our own studio space, which was really a huge space to have. They say, you're never going to have a space like this again, so really take advantage of it, which is kind of true. But yeah, it was just great faculty. I really am still in touch with a lot of my teachers. Having the opportunity, being in a liberal arts college, having the opportunity to take classes in all sorts of different things just inspires you to, create more.
And it does have a curatorial program.
There is. Also? There's a curatorial program as well. It's a graduate program. I've also have some friends that have done that too. So
seems like you've sort of skipped over that and got right into it.
Yeah, I wasn't even... that's the great thing about the Hudson Opera House is that they welcome in projects like this, and I wasn't even expecting to be involved in it. But when Myron came in with the idea, I was like, I was completely on board. It was great. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it sounds like you're going to let Myron take over the space and curate it and turn it into another.
I'll be there too.
Another kind of.
Myron says he's going to take over, but I'm going to also.
She'll be there.
Yeah.
I just want to get a last sentence or so in and say, you know, besides the fact that I'm thrilled with the outcome of this, is that I feel very privileged to have reached this point in my life and feel that I can use my gift, my talent, to promote some social change, as small as it might be.
Not easy to do. And don't go away, Myron. I'm not done with you yet.
I raised my hand. Can't I cut it a bit?
No, you still have. We still have a few more minutes.
Okay.
And I'll close, since we only have about 3 or 4 minutes, I want to stay on the subject of this exhibition. Because you've done a great job of talking about it. And I'm personally excited to want to see it. I wonder, or I'm just thinking off the top of my head, could something like this be probably a self-published little book?
It could be.
I think, you know, if I was one of the students, I would love that. I think for many artists, the self-publish of a book is something that does last forever and can be shared.
I was hoping it would be, but now I have a second job to run around and chase wealthy friends to donate money so we can get this accomplished.
But in the original New York artworks, there was a book that was created,
yes.
In which the images as well as artist reflections were in the book. So the book that we have at the show will have the image as well as the reflections. And, you know, we could maybe make copies for all of the participants.
Of course, the book I would create would be a masterpiece.
Exactly. It would have to be. So we need to think about it a little more,
for,
you know.
For me to be interested, it's got to be beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frank?
In parting, I just wanted to say thank you to the Hudson Opera House. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a perfect example of how they would assist the community and run with it. Any time I or some of my friends want to give a reading, we'll say, oh, we'll do it at the Opera House, or, oh, well, Gary will do it at the Opera House. I mean, it's something that the community can depend on, and I'm just so thankful for that. It's my Hudson pet, the Opera House, for sure.
And it's amazing they actually trusted Myron.
It is amazing.
Incredible.
It's because they put him
in my hands, you know. They just were like, you take.
It just shows you how sincere they are in trying to serve the public. They'll give him anything.
So to remind our listeners, since we're coming up on the top of the hour, we have 2 more minutes left. Any parting words from the three of you? You've got maybe 30 seconds. Talk about anything you want. Louise, I'm looking at you.
Come see our show, May 16th,
all right.
5 to 7.
Perfect. Myron?
And then you might hear the uncensored Myron with all the dirty words that were left out.
Yes, we did warn Myron beforehand.
Everybody's going to come for that now, Myron.
And Frank?
Yeah, this has been great. The whole experience has been terrific. Look forward to participating next year if we can all put our heads together, our efforts together, and make it happen again. So it's been great. Thanks.
Well, thank you, all three of you, for being on the other Art of the Hudson Valley, in a way, because this program will be archived. We have in a capsule artworks, Hudson artworks.
All right.
So thank you, listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chad.
And you've been listening to the Art of the Hudson Valley. I'll see you on the radio, won't I? 1 month from now. Signing off, Chad Weckler, WGXC 90.7 FM. See you on the radio.
wondered how fabulous I sounded on the radio.
WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, hands-on community radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
If you enjoy musical theater, the Mack Hayden Theater in nearby Chatham, New York offers all musicals all summer long. Talented professional performers.